Okay, for the third of our three presenters, we have Andrew Husko, who is the appointed actuary for General Insurance at Suncorp. Over the last 12 years, Andrew's held the appointed actuary role firstly at Allianz Australia and since 2011 for Suncorp. For 5 years, he was also the Chief Risk Officer for Allianz. Currently, in addition to the appointed actuary role, Andrew is responsible for the actuarial pricing work for the commercial insurance, the natural hazards modeling for the general insurance business, and capital modeling. In total, Andrew has over 25 years' experience across all areas of general insurance in both corporate and consulting environments. And he's going to talk to us today about some of the requirements on the appointed actuary relating to reinsurance, capital management, and risk management, along with some of the challenges relating to reserving and risk quantification. Andrew will also talk to us about some of the practicalities actuaries face and some specific examples of issues that many of us will come across. I'll hand over to Andrew.
Thank you. I suppose it's a good thing and a bad thing talking about the challenges of being the appointed actuary and giving a presentation on the challenges. I suppose what I was originally going to talk to was actually covered off, thankfully, by many other earlier speakers, which is actually very encouraging because it means that at least the way I'm thinking of it, and hopefully the way appointed actuaries are thinking of it, is the way the rest of the industry, or many in the rest of the industry, are talking about it. So what I'm going to talk about today is, as Andy said, it's two things. First, I want to talk a little bit about the technical requirements and how I see the requirements for the appointed actuary and some of the detail involved in that. And secondly, as Andy said, some of the challenges or some of the practical challenges and differences that appointed actuaries face. In particular, I suppose one point I'd say is that the appointed actuary is actually not the same role in every company, because every company has actually got differences and every company is actually quite different, be it size, be it business it's writing. So, firstly, I can pick this the right way. Yay! Essentially, from a statutory actuarial point of view, there's two real important things that the actuary's required to produce each year, and I think just probably just about everyone in the room will be familiar with them. Firstly, the FCR, the Financial Condition Report, and secondly, the ILVR, the Insurance Liability Valuation Report. For an FCR, in terms of providing input to the reinsurance renewal process, or the reinsurance process in particular, it's often after the decisions are made, because the FCR is usually produced after a renewal period rather than before it. Having said that, of course, if you're actually doing these over a number of years, you get the benefit of providing feedback at least for next year's. So, I mean, three key areas where really it's dealing with a catastrophe risk. Firstly, around the adequacy of reinsurance. One of the requirements of the FCR is to provide an opinion on the adequacy of the reinsurance arrangements for an insurer. This ties back to the modelling work that's been done and been talked about earlier today. And obviously, particularly in terms of how the insurer will actually meet how it actually determines its capital requirements, and in particular, how the actual structural, the limits and the structure of the reinsurance, so that it actually meets its expectations when it comes to the 1 in 200 year return period for the vertical requirement and the requirements on the horizontal. The other thing that often an appointed actuary will need to talk on will be on the volatility of profits. Because one thing to talk about capital, I mean, the discussion here has been very much on capital, but often management will be very interested to know your opinion as to what the impact of the reinsurance structure you've chosen has on the volatility of your profits. The adequacy of the reinsurance itself actually plays in very strongly with the other element, with a couple of other elements of the FCR, in particular, the overall capital management of the organisation. And of course, the actual calculation of the capital requirement, with the key one of the key calculations for most insurers being the ICRC, insurance capital, the insurance concentration risk charge. It's like the ICAP. I always tend to try and remember exactly which letters stand for which in the ICAP. The ICRC obviously it's made up of the three components or four components. One being the vertical requirement, which is the 1 in 200 or the limit usually to which a tower is purchased, the first losses or second loss of an insurer. The second element or second third element, of course, is the horizontal requirement, which is actually the, I've got to remember which, I always say these the wrong way around, the 4 times 1 in 6 and the 3 times 1 in 10 year return periods, all of which are to do with catastrophe losses. So it's not actually dealing necessarily with models, you're actually dealing with more frequent events and need to be comfortable as to what those numbers are. The other thing is, obviously, with interaction of the reinsurance, interaction of your reinsurance arrangements with the capital of the organisation. The general rule being that the more reinsurance you purchase, as John showed earlier, the less capital, less statutory capital you require. And of course, obviously, that then flows out to how much capital you want above your prescribed minimum. Also then plays into how much reinsurance you purchase as to what the allocation of capital is to each individual classes. So all of those are elements that actually need to be opined on. I mean, the big new document, the wonderful ICAP and ICAP report, they deal with capital, and that's something that the actuary is required to actually have a look at and comment on. All of these, capital management, the risk management, allocation of capital to products, all of that actually ties in with the overall risk management framework. And one of the other requirements of the financial condition report is, of course, to comment on the risk management framework. So the appointed actuary, I suppose, has this view across the whole of the organisation, of which reinsurance or catastrophe risk is one of those big elements. For most insurers, reinsurance is obviously one of the largest purchases it will make. So in terms of ILVR, I mean, in terms of doing reserves, probably not as much in terms of cat risk, although it can be an interesting one, particularly if you've got very, very large events, for example, New Zealand earthquake, and you don't necessarily know yet how much it's going to cost. You're actually going to be using cat risk or cat risk modelling work that you've done there to try and give you some indications as to what's going on. Obviously, as time goes on, you start using the experience from the history. But on the premium liability side, which, of course, is the forward-looking element, you do actually have to have a look at the reinsurance recoveries you're expecting to get from your premium liabilities. So you actually have an element of the cat risk. It's not necessarily the cat cost, it's actually the cat risk or your natural hazard approach. I know that inside Suncorp, and we take a view, in fact, many insurers would take a view that it's actually all about the total cost of what we call natural hazards. And where you draw, you've got your retained natural hazards and you've got your ceded natural hazards. And the discussion, and one of the key discussions you have with management is, you're going to have, this is your expected cost, or this is the variability of your cost. It's actually where you set your reinsurance, or where you set your capital, is where you draw the line between what you retain and what you pass on. Obviously, in terms of reinsurance recoveries and the cost of those reinsurance, it also can have an impact on your liability adequacy test or recoverability of your deferred acquisition costs. On the risk margin side, the standards require us to look at both the gross and the net, or the risk margins, both gross and net of reinsurance. Obviously, if we're going to come up with a net risk margin, we need to take into account the reinsurance that we have. I know in practice, I think many actuaries probably focus only on the net, and most insurers have a consistent, thankfully, a consistent reinsurance arrangements from year to year. But unfortunately, if they do change dramatically, it's a consideration and a challenge for the actuary to go back and revisit risk margins and what they may need to be. A further element, and it was touched on briefly with John, is obviously the strength, John and Ty, strength of counterparties and the relationships you have there. The recoverability is another element that the actuary needs to actually comment on. So being aware of all of these things is one of those big challenges for an actuary being across the whole of the element of the reinsurance. And I must admit, the presentations this morning on the earthquakes and the wind models and so forth were actually very, very illuminating. I don't think I'm any more certain as to understand what the true cat risk is for Suncorp. In fact, it was quite interesting. We actually had I was with the board on about 2 weeks ago at Suncorp board, talking about the reinsurance purchase coming up. And obviously the APRA letter that came out in December was very high in their mind. They were very interested in it. We were very much at pains to point out the elements that APRA were looking for the board to do. Thankfully, by the way, I think the board has a genuine interest in it and does have a strong knowledge of it. But I must admit, probably the element that they hadn't spent as much time as I'm sure many boards haven't to this stage is on the uncertainty of the models. And the uncertainty of the models, I mean, you would have seen today, is actually very large. Now, for Suncorp placed, I think it's $5.8 billion last year. And a couple of weeks ago, we announced it was going to be around $6 billion worth of catastrophe reinsurance on the tower side. And when you're talking to a board about the uncertainty of what that $6 billion number represents, whether it represents a 1 in 200 and the accuracy thereof, it makes for a very sobering moment for the board when they realise the amount of risk that they're taking on, or potential risk that they're taking on, and the uncertainty of the models themselves. Now, I didn't get asked this question, but I would imagine that one of them may well have been thinking, well, what sort of uncertainty, how certain are you of the $6 billion? And that would have been a very hard question. But the answer wouldn't have been within a couple of $100 million, that's for sure. And all I can say is, on that note, I'm probably glad I'm not a board director, but I can tell you it would be a scary thing, particularly if you've got directors on a board who are not that technical. I mean, I'm at Suncorp board, I'm fortunate there are a number of actually quite technical people on there, so they actually do have a knowledge as a group. They have a good understanding of the model uncertainty. I do know that because I just followed a session dealing with risk-based capital modelling, so they learnt all about model uncertainty on that session as well. So, in terms of the requirements for statutory requirements for an actuary, it's you have these statutory requirements. One of the big things I do find in practice is that because you're actually required to opine on things like ICRC and on the risk management framework and on the adequacy of the reinsurance arrangements, that by default, to a degree, you are actually or can potentially be acting as the policeman because they're going to be sitting there going, Andrew, is what we're doing okay? Are you comfortable with that? And you're always checking. Now, in my role, being an internal actuary, it's actually a bit of a positive. Being an external actuary, it can be a bit of a challenge, I'm sure. So, just moving on to some of the practicalities and some of the, I suppose, thoughts I had about the differences between insurers that we have throughout the industry. Firstly, and I alluded just then, internal and external appointed actuaries. In the industry, we have something like 100 licensed general insurers or thereabouts. We have those that write a lot of business, such as Suncorp, IAG. We have a number of insurers out there, and I previously wasn't appointed actuary of a small insurer, writing $10 or $15 million worth of premium. The use of an appointed actuary is, if they don't have exemption, their use of appointed actuary is probably going to be, could be used as simply as a bit of a compliance type work. The external actuary may be only really coming in a couple of times a year. Ideally, they're in fairly regularly, but they, because of the relative costs of the appointed actuary within a small organisation, they can actually be very wary about the amount of times they seek the advice and the input of an actuary. So it makes it harder for an external actuary to come through and once a year come through and provide an opinion as to the adequacy of the reinsurance arrangements, particularly when often the smaller insurers, when it comes to, for example, the reinsurance modelling work, all they do is outsource it simply to their broker, get the broker to tell them what the number is, and they're happy. So from an internal point of view, and as Andy said, I mean, I actually have a team, I wouldn't say responsible for the modelling, but definitely we actually have a lot of the modelling work done by our brokers Aon, but I actually have some skilled people in my team who actually pull a lot of the modelling work together, and it does make an advantage. It means that, you know, I'm actually, this is the challenge being the appointed actuary, I'm actually part of the decision as well as reviewing the decision, and that's an interesting challenge as being an appointed actuary. But it also then means that in terms of making sure there's a robust process and a robust conclusion, that you do actually get a good chance for that discussion to go on. It also then, you know, you can then spend time talking about things such as, you know, allocation of reinsurance costs, which I know is very a very topical discussion. I've got Tim Clark, my counterpart at IAG, there smiling. I'm sure he's been through the same discussions as well, where you actually decide how to allocate your reinsurance down to the individual business lines. And you know you've got it right when they're screaming about the same. The other one, large, small insurers. I mean, as a large insurer in Suncorp, obviously we have, we do actually have quite a bit of history going back, particularly for smaller events and for the, particularly to help try and calibrate a 1 in 6 or a 1 in 10 year event. A lot of that information is in the history, is recorded inside Suncorp. For smaller insurers, it's a bit more of a challenge. They're obviously much more volatile, particularly on a gross basis, to try and understand what their 1 in 6 and 1 in 10 year losses are. In terms of understanding the models, a challenge for the appointed actuary. I'm glad I was here this morning. I mean, I don't know whether I did learn some stuff, but it made me much more confident that there was a lot that I didn't know about models, and a lot that the modellers themselves didn't know. Strengths and weaknesses of individual models. Inside Suncorp, we use look at a number of models. We have problems of inputs, some of the data inputs, some of the assumptions that go in there. I'll talk about those in a minute. Underlying limits, what perils? We talked about the lesser modelled perils and how you actually allow for those and how you include those. Quality of data inputs is an interesting one because... And a simple example that I've got there is the market practice in New Zealand up until, about 3 or 4 years ago, was actually to not have some insureds on policies, which means that when earthquakes happen and houses come crashing down, insurers are just going to replace the houses, and the costs can actually be rather prohibitive. So when you come into doing modelling, if you don't have a sum insured in a home portfolio, what do you have? What do you do? You've actually got to come up with a way of doing that. And there needs to be a reasonably robust process of doing that. Inside Suncorp at the moment, we're in the process of renewing policies with a sum insured on them, which means we've got some do have sum insured, some don't. So there's a whole lot of data inputs that go in that way. We talked about, I think someone earlier talked about, data down to XY coordinates. Because the models, proprietary models, do actually have the ability to model down to that level. But in the commercial space, you do have problems because depending how good your systems are, and Suncorp has many of those systems, that is, you actually do have problems in terms of how things are recorded in the system. How are things recorded in terms of you've got a commercial business, in terms of all of the locations that they may be there? It may well be only recorded by postcode, not by XY coordinate. If you're dealing with somewhere like, up near Townsville, the postcode for Townsville, my understanding, is actually goes about 50 kilometres inland. If you're modelling a cyclone risk, I think the models actually, my understanding is the models actually place the risks, if you've only got postcode in, the models actually place the risk right in the middle of the postcode, which is about 20 or 30 kilometres inland. On the cyclone side, usually if you're 20 or 30 kilometres inland, you actually do have slightly less intensity usually for a cyclone, because as it hits land, it actually starts to dissipate. So you've got a whole lot of different variations. On the commercial side, you've got challenges with, as I said, with getting the detailed information. You do actually have potentially different wordings between policies, particularly when you're getting into large corporate policies. You've got to make sure you take account of, account's been taken of different facultative arrangements. Depending on how strong the facultative arrangements process is, there may actually be a wide variety of potential reinsurance arrangements in place for the underlying risks. So all of these are stuff that items that the appointed actuary, really should start to be aware of, and not necessarily, highlight them, because often the insurer will be aware of that, but to actually understand what the potential impact does have on the resulting modelled numbers. As well as data inputs, you've actually got some assumptions there, and I've listed a couple. Demand surge, and this is one we've had lots of discussion on inside Suncorp over the last couple of years. Obviously, when we actually have events, depending on where they are, you can obviously get an increase in inflation or increased cost because obviously limited resources to do repairs or rebuilding or whatever it is. Of course, if a hailstorm of a certain size hits Perth, if a hailstorm of the same size hits Perth as hits Sydney, you're not going to get the same level of demand surge because Sydney has a lot more smash repairers than what you get in Perth. But, I mean, you've actually got to understand and make an assumption about what allowances either in the models that you've already used, the proprietary models, or what extra allowance you'll need to make. Growth in the business, it's an interesting one because from an APRA point of view, your purchasing reinsurance actually should be covering you for the whole of the next 12 months so that you've actually got to take into account the growth in the portfolio, which usually is tied back to a budget. But of course, if they're overstating budget growth, then what do you do on your assumptions for modelling? It makes for an interesting discussion. And the last one being inflation. In fact, the second last one. The other one being inflation in terms of obviously just normal inflation. The other one is one around more about the dollar data input. So I mentioned different systems and construction type. And one of the big things in the models will have different construction types as various inputs. Now, depending on how old systems are, depending on what mix of businesses you've got, depending on what data you put into the system, you may either have unknown construction types. You may have construction types that don't fit in nicely with the way the models work themselves. So there's a whole lot of detail in there which, when you lift the lid on, you discover the uncertainty as to what's going on. And there was a few minutes spent with the board a couple of weeks ago talking about these uncertainties as well. Something that, I mean, how I haven't had to deal with directly at this stage, of course, is what Ty was talking about earlier, which is all the alternative markets, cat bonds and so forth. Obviously, if those come into play, you'll have a whole lot of challenges because often they're single shot as opposed to the standard tower purchase, tower purchase with a reinstatement. But also often, you know, cat bonds that might actually be based on an industry loss rather than individual loss. So you actually end up with a mismatch on what's covered and what's not covered. So there's some challenges for anyone who actually put these stuff in there. So it can actually be some challenges if you get in there. I've mentioned there's other non-modelled risks as well. So there's some of the practicalities and the challenges you face as an appointed actuary. There's probably others as well, and I'd be interested to hear from other appointed actuaries out there who've probably got some when we get to the question time, which is in about 30 seconds or so. Thank you.